The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. Man, did we get a big guest this week, and boy, is Shannon happy. The heartthrob himself, Joe Manganiello, comes on the SDR Show, and we talk about his new movie, we talk about Deathstroke, we talk about his wife. I mean, it's great that he did the show. Really surprised we got him, very happy we got him, and I think Shannon had to change her underpants three times throughout the episode. Remember, we do the show every single Wednesday, every single Saturday, throughout the month of April. If you go to GasDigitalNetwork.com and you're a subscriber or you join the newsletter, you could potentially win an PS5. Remember, we just want you to share and spread the show. That's all that really matters. Use the code SDR for 20% off on GasDigitalNetwork.com. Or just really, we just want you to share the show. We've been having a couple of really good months listenership-wise. It means you guys are listening to me, which makes me oh so happy. But every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. live at Gas Digital Network, or 5 days after with commercials, wherever you consume a podcast, or on YouTube.com, you could watch the newest 15 episodes. Here it is right now, the Joe Manganiello episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. James Mattern back again. And of course, Shannon is here holding down the fort. James, I like your background, especially knowing who we're going to talk to. We're going to talk some music. You put some Kiss in the background, some sports in the background. You got it all covered.
I like to have every bit. I got a little bit of everything here. All right. I'll get a pot and pan if he wants to talk cooking. I'll bring that out. I'm at my house again. There's no screaming children, baby.
Oh, thank God. All right. Leave us a review on iTunes and let's just jump right into this. For God's sakes, the man of the hour, Joe Manganiello. Let's start it this way. Of course, you know, from True Blood, from Magic Mike, he's Deathstroke, married to Sofia Vergara. New movie we'll get into, Shoplifters of the World, and a bunch of other stuff I want to get into as well. We're both 6'5". We're both in the 200-pound range. So from one heartthrob to another, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Nice to be here. I didn't know you were 6'5 sitting down. You can never tell how big somebody is on Zoom.
Yeah, well, I've seen many pictures of you, so I know how big you are. But can I ask how much you weigh? Because I'm fat.
Now I'm around 230, but like Sabotage, I was up to 250, which is probably the biggest I ever was.
Okay. Yeah, I should be about 230, 240, but I'm now about 260 because I got fat. But I'm trying to get back to I've lost 40 pounds already. I got into 300 at one point, but just out of depression eating. But we're COVID, I got back into it. So now I'm running and I lost about 45 pounds already. So I feel pretty good about it.
Congrats. That's great.
I don't look like you though, Joe. I'll tell you that much. So let me ask you this. We'll get into the new movie as well. I saw a couple of things about you that I thought was adorable. First of all, where is the dog Bubbles? Really cute. Is she around?
She's sleeping on my lap right now.
Oh, how cute is that? Oh, how sweet. How old is she?
7.5.
Oh, my God. Okay, so wait, how long do you have her?
About 1.5 years. She was a rescue.
Okay, wow, okay. Way to strike a column in the wind column there. That's adorable. So let's start with this. I just watched Shoplifters of the World. We'll get into that first. Me growing up, I'm a little older than you. 80s rock was my wheelhouse. I would represent, I guess, Full Metal Mick would be more me than anything else, right? The whole thing takes place, if you don't know anything about the movie, first of all, that is a song title from the Smiths, and it is how would we put this? An urban legend, if you will. Not 100% sure it's true or not. I couldn't find out if it was that a guy took over a radio station in the late 80s and made them play all Smith's tunes. Did you ever find out if it really happened or not?
Yeah, so the there was a young man in Denver, Colorado in 1987, the day the Smiths broke up, who was so distraught over the breakup that he went to his local hair metal station armed with a case full of records and intended to force the hair metal DJ to play nothing but Smiths all night long to impress this girl that he was in love with. Now, in real life, the guy never went through with it. He actually called himself in.
He told about himself and never did it.
Yeah, yeah, and he never made it. So we made the movie of what if the guy actually did do it, and it's played like really. I love Eller Coltrane, and he's the guy who holds me up at the station. And I was just I loved him in Boyhood, and when he came into Screen Test, I liked him. He's like he has this wonderfully odd quality to him that's kind of counterculture. Sort of feel to him just naturally, and I just thought we got to cast this kid. Like we're gonna have a great time together.
What was interesting about it is obviously it's shot to feel somewhat like an 80s movie. I mean, obviously it takes place in the 80s, but also just in general, I would say the pacing almost feels 80s. But what's interesting about it for me as a fan that grew up of the 80s, it deals with, I would say, high school types that were never dealt with in the Pretty in Pink world. Or anything like that, which was, I thought, a really smart way to handle it.
Yes, very much. Well, you can't tell the story of the Smiths in a John Hughes context, let's say. I mean, not to say that John Hughes wouldn't have been a fan of the Smiths or couldn't have made this movie. It's just that if you look at The Breakfast Club, if you look at Pretty in Pink, you look at 16 Candles, Say Anything, you look at those teen movies of the 80s, they never got into the goths, the punkers, the mods, the new waves, the weirdos. Like Ali Sheedy and Breakfast Club was about as close as they got to that. So what really attracted me to the script was the fact that we could go back and tell the story of kids like that.
Right. And even kids struggling with sexuality, I think was handled too much, maybe touched on here and there, but not as
like
much.
Like the John Cryer character, yeah, maybe.
Somewhat, you know? But never like as flat out as being... No. Handled in this movie, which I think was a nice thing to see. And then also my personal favorite part is when he took a call and someone said, play some Dawkins. It made me very happy. Throw yes. a little Dawkins. Make Don happy. Let him get a shout out.
Yeah. But of course, like when you're talking about like, you know, the exploration of the sexuality in James Bloor's character, Patrick, things are different now in terms of acceptance than they were back then.
Of course.
And so there was a bit of like, there were a lot of conversations that our director, Stephen Kayak, our writer director had with James about how to play it, because it was someone struggling with their identity in that time period was different than someone struggling with their identity in today's time.
Now it's
far
more accepted. It's not like, I remember when I was a kid, a girl I was close with came out to me to tell me she was gay. And my response was cool. Like I was fine with it. I think she was expecting more of a, what? Like some sort of like genuine surprise and shock. And I was just like, all right, cool. Let's go on. And because it was so taboo back then, she was expecting more of a reaction, if that makes any sense. Where nowadays it is like no big deal, so to speak.
Well, and I think the way that teens had to really camouflage themselves or try to fit in, I think is really what defined that era. Where now I think there's, I won't say that it's completely easy, but I think that being you in whatever capacity is I think more acceptable than it was back then. Back then you had to hide.
Right. And so there were a lot of conversations today about that. If you didn't have social media, if you took social media out and just kept the way people are looking at it now, it would be far easier to handle. The online bullying is a fascinating thing, to where it's 24/7 onslaughts that you can't avoid is kind of fascinating.
Well, and also you could move away back in the day and go somewhere else and start your life over and be someone else. And now you can't. Your social media will follow you everywhere you go. And, a lot of the, a lot of the conversations that we had as producers heading into production were to make sure that the production was authentic, that it wasn't a caricature of the 80s or 1987 or any of the characters that were going through the struggles that they were going through at the time. you know, to make it feel authentic. And I really have to give credit to our writer director, Stephen Kayak, because a lot of this one night in the life of these teens is a pastiche of different memories or different parties or different places that he was at or people that he knew in his life. And he was very, very hands-on with everything from the wardrobing to the hair to the makeup, you know, and obviously to the words that were being said.
I was even looking to see, because I'm, you know, I'm a product of the 80s, if there was anything that didn't fit the situation or something out of place, you know, and even the 1987, you were going to play a new Kiss record, would, I guess, would be, was it probably Crazy Nights at that point? I could be wrong. But they broke up that year. That happened that year. So it's about the same time frame. So it was, I'm sure that was looked into to make sure that that would make sense.
Oh, 100%. I mean, yeah, well, I referenced the new Kiss record. And then, of course, I'm, when you meet my character, I'm listening to Bark at the Moon.
Right.
Which I approached Ozzy and Sharon about using. And of course, you know, that would have been the hot Ozzy record at the time, which is great because it's one of my favorite Ozzy records. And then, of course, my character has he has a very dark history with Metallica's Master of Puppets,
yeah,
which had
great.
Just
that
come out
great.
The year before. And, you know, you can't bring it up around Full Metal Mickey. He'll get upset.
I looked up all that shit to make sure it all made sense timeline-wise, which I think is cool to see that you put the extra work in. The one, this is not about the movie itself, but it's about something you said. Someone asked you if you could pick one artist where you only play that artist exclusively on a radio station, who would you say? And you said Pantera, Far Beyond Driven, and Prior. The problem with that is you left out their crappy hair metal albums that they put out.
Yeah, I think if I had to say it again, I mean, I would probably go Tool if I had to say it again. I think Tool, and here's the thing about Tool. Most bands, most artists cease to be relevant once they turn 30 years old. It just kind of is a thing. Like if you really look into it, you know, and you always see bands in concert and you're like, please don't play the new stuff. Please just play the hits. Like, I don't want to hear Chinese Democracy. Just play Appetite, play Patience. Like, you know, you can do a couple of Usual Illusions, but like, man, come on. And Tool is one of those bands that I find myself like, I mean, and maybe this is just, I don't know if there's other people out there that think this, but like, once you really crack the code of Fear Inoculum and you really get into the new Tool album, it makes going back to Undertow, to Anima, like sometimes difficult. You listen to those older songs that were huge hits or made them famous, and you're like, they're not as complex as Numa. Right. I want more. I just want to go listen
that's
to Numa again,
yeah,
which
true.
I can't think of another band that's gotten even better as time goes on.
I would say a couple of bands, and James may have thought also, James, big audiophile as well. Not that I was ever a huge fan, but they've maintained relevancy. Their entire career would be U2 up until their iTunes fiasco. Foo Fighters, I'd say also, was stayed relevant throughout their whole career. And he's definitely older than 30. And then until he died, Prince was super relevant the whole time. Those are my three off the top of my head.
Okay.
James?
Let me just say this, first of all. I'm not a religious fella, but Joe, if you start a religion tomorrow, I'm all in. Everything you're checking.
Yeah, he helps
you
animals.
Have a wolf behind you.
Well, the wolf, I guess, is from True Blood. I guess that's who that is, right?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. You've got the you don't want to be. I can tell you, you're uncomfortable being handsome, but you've got that charm, and so I'll follow you into the fire. You clearly like rock music. You probably, if I ask you, your Mount Rushmore Smiths would probably fucking surprise the shit out of me with some great odd ones. Whatever you need, and I know you're a wrestling fan, so whatever you need, sir, I got your back.
It's also annoying, Joe. Like, you look into a ridiculously good-looking guy, married 5 years to probably one of the most beautiful women in the world. Like, you want to hate you, and you look, you're like, God damn it, this guy helps animals. He's a nice guy.
I tap.
Like, God damn it.
If you told me you also volunteer 80 hours a week helping like charities, I'd believe you. I believe you. I think you're that good. I can just tell.
All right, now I got to find a cause for us to go fight for. Well, Pittsburgh Children's Hospital. I'm on the board of Pittsburgh Children's.
Screw kids.
You know, so there we go. We can We can go visit the kids sometime.
Yeah, in Pittsburgh. We'll do it. By the way, I'm sure Shannon's already halfway out the door. I can tell you that much.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Have you ever thought about, by the way, doing this? It's Sofia Vergara and Joe Manganiello. Sojo. Why not Sojo? That works.
Jofia?
Jofia. That's good, good also. Yeah. All right. So now, just to put a button on the new movie, Shoplifters of the World, we'll move on to some other things. You also produced it with your brother, and it took years, and you produced Arch Enemy with your brother, too. Do you two work together on a slew of movies, or are these the first two?
No. Those are 3 and 4. Arch Enemy 3, Shoplifters 4. So we also produced another film a few years back, film about a guy who goes into prison at age 19. He was a baseball prodigy, grew up in the Bronx, gets drafted by the Yankees, gets into a street fight with his buddies from the Bronx, winds up in prison, winds up doing what he has to do to stay alive in prison. You know, violence, meaning violence.
And
he gets more of a sentence tacked on, winds up getting out 18 years later and has to pick up his life, missed baseball, missed the girl, missed everything, you know, missed his life, missed his mother's funeral, comes home and winds up getting a second chance at baseball in the minor league, riding a bus, and winds up bumping into the girl whose heart he broke when he went into prison at 19. And that's actually played by Sofia. I cast Sofia.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. Interest.
So it's a movie called Bottom of the Ninth. And we put that out for your, and then I shot a documentary actually about a 55-year-old male stripper who had been stripping at this club in Dallas, Texas consecutively since 1979 named Randy the Master Blaster. It's old cowboy. And the movie is called Le Bear, which Le Bear, is the name of the club Le Bear. In Dallas.
Yeah. And went to the Le Bear in Florida. There was one in Florida.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Because it was right next to a female strip club, it was a place where you walked into the entrance, left was Le Bear, right was Solid Gold, I think, I forget. So I had actually been, and then what they would do sometimes is drop the wall in the middle and you'd have the guy dancers and the girl. That was crazy.
It's like a Catholic high school dance.
exactly. Except with really good looking people. So now Arch Enemy, yeah. Which I watched Arch Enemy as well. I'd like to feel that I really understand what someone's about and what they're promoting. And I really enjoyed the confusion as to whether or not, are you really a superhero? That's the kind of, or is he just fucking cracked out or on meth, whatever it is, and not really believing anything? Really well executed. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. That was a fun one to shoot.
My question is this, did you really have a meth coach for the movie or is that not true?
Oh yeah. No, I had a homeless consultant who
you could have just used James, by the way.
What's that? Oh,
yeah, those first few years in New York were rough. I mean, look, what are we doing? You know, I came out here with a pack of ramen in my pocket. That's it. No bank account. What do you want?
So I had a guy who lived on the streets for over 20 years, he influenced a lot of the scenes that we shot in the beginning about like what happened in the day, a day in the life of someone living on the streets in LA. And then, yes, I had a meth coach that I brought to the set. And, I have a psychotic episode on methamphetamine in the film and start punching holes through a wall. And I would look over after the scene and he would give me the,
That's funny. Was your meth coach just a roundabout way for you to be able to try meth on the set whenever you wanted to?
Yeah, I was completely method. I just told my wife, listen, I'm going to go to some dark places, but you married an actor, so I'm sorry.
And by the way, for fans of Always Sunny, Glenn Howerton is in it like a sort of Pablo Escobar in tennis shorts. It's very strange, but it's very enjoyable. I really enjoyed that very much.
Yeah, I love Glenn. I'm getting ready to do an episode of his show, AP Bio.
Oh, that's cool. I'm waiting for the next Always Sunny because, God damn it, it's like 14 years of loving that show. I know he's not on as much now, but just one of my fucking favorite, probably he's one great. Of my favorite TV shows of all time.
All right, before we go any further, you saw us play this game a couple weeks ago with the guys from No Need for Apologies. Really fun party game called SDR, right up our alley. It's called Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. It's basically kind of like a Scattergories with reasons to drink. It's just a rock and roll, sex, and drug game. What more do you need? If you use the code SDRSHOW25, you get 25% off, especially now that we're starting to allow ourselves some sort of interaction with friends again. It's definitely a great time to have a drinking game such as Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. You go to Sex, Drug, Rock Game. That's Sex, Drug, Rock Game. Use the code SDRSHOW25. You get 25% off the entire game. It's like Cards Against Humanity if it was invented by Led Zeppelin. You saw us playing it. It was fun. Anybody can play. It's very easy. You don't really need to understand any big, complicated rules. Just a fun game. Great game to have in the house. Sex, Drug, Rock Game. So it's all plural. Sex, Drug, Rock Game.com. Use the code SDRSHOW25. Get 25% off your entire order. And let's get back into it. All right, so now I want to get into something else that I find fascinating. It goes back to you being ridiculously good-looking and charming and then saying you had no friends as a kid, and that's how you moved into becoming a big D&D dungeon master, fan of the genre. You also work with Hasbro to design pieces of or characters or whatever, but I watched this. Tell me if I'm right. It's Tom Morello, Vince Vaughn, Big Show are all in your weekly Dungeons & Dragons game. Is that right?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, Dan and Dave, who created Game of Thrones, Dan's Weekly, Dave pops in when he can. And I can go on and on. I mean, there's like people that you wouldn't know, but like who are story designers for League of Legends and things like that. You know, like they have really cool jobs. And, you know, my brother, my producing partner, graduate playwright from Carnegie Mellon that I grew up with, actors, directors, producers. Yeah, they're all, I run a weekly game. Yeah.
And do you keep it true to form as us being kids playing D&D with no females, that there's no females in the group or there's some females?
Well, we're all married guys. So traipsing in a line of women into the basement for 7 hours every Friday really isn't going to fly with my Colombian wife, nor with anybody else's wife either. So,
fair enough.
You know, there's a lot of that, like, how come you don't let women in? You're a gatekeeper. It's like, we're all married. What are we doing? It's, you know,
I'm going to bring in my 18-year-old babysitter. She wants to play with us. Like, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't think so. That's not going to fly.
Go ahead, James. I can see you chomping.
Hollywood has changed so much. Like, this is good. As a guy who was like a nerd but a bit bro-ish, like, I kind of like that the big Hollywood hangout now is D&D. Yeah. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it was Gary Shandling's basketball games. And like 60 years before that, it's like Cesar Romero orgies. So, like, I like this progress.
Orgies.
Well, Johnny, don't forget
D&D.
Johnny Carson had a celebrity poker game that everybody was trying to get into.
Oh yeah,
and to me, that's kind of what this is. A lot of us were like, you know, we like poker, played poker. I had a weekend basketball game I used to play in years ago, and so, you know, all of us kind of had these ways of hanging out and socializing, and this just became it. You know, I picked it up again. I ran it as a kid, and like you said, Ralph, I started working with Dungeons and Dragons as a consultant and a writer and a, you know, game designer and, you know, character content creator. And it just led to me running this game. You know, my brother was like, you got to do it. Come on, let's do a weekend game. Do it. You know,
how do those calls go to the first couple of people? Like, hey, Vince, D&D, huh?
Well, there was a group that, the initial group was like director Brad Peyton and his producing partner, Jeff Fearson, who Brad wrote and directed Rampage and Jeff produced it. They were in the initial group. James Gunn was in there before he went away to shoot Suicide 2. So there was like, and Taron Killam of Saturday Night Live, like he was in the initial group. And then it started morphing. Like, people were going away for work. I started going away for work. And when I came back, Tom Morello joined. And then Tom said, hey, there's this guy in my kid's carpool who really wants to play. I was telling him about it. He really wants to play. His name's Dan. You know, what do you think? And I'm like, I don't know. The group is kind of big right now. And I don't know if we have room. And I'm like, what is your friend? Who's your friend? Like, what does he do? And he goes, he's one of the guys who created Game of Thrones. Okay. All right, yeah, we can find him a chair.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
We'll work it out.
We'll get a chair in there for him.
yeah. And then Vince, you know, Tom is friends with Vince. They're both Chicago guys. So he's like, hey, I was on this flight with Vince. We were talking. Vince wants to play. So Vince jumped back in. I had hired Big Show for this D&D event that I put together where it was all big, giant dudes. The joke was, if you can't deadlift 400 pounds, you can't be in our D&D group.
Oh, I so it was all like just to be in that group.
It's great. I had to learn.
Yeah, my trainer of 10 years who won the CrossFit Games at 46, won the Masters division, and he's a shithouse. He was in the group, and then this other guy. So, you know, I got Big Show to come in because Big Show played as a kid. So I'm like, great. Right. You got
a Big Show. Probably is like only 400 deadlift. No problem.
That was the minimum. I was setting the bar minimum at 400. So obviously, like, my trainer, you know, he's well over 600.
Right. I don't know if the most I ever benched was 3-something, but I don't ever try to deadlift. I only ever did, ever tried that. I think it always hurt my fear of hurting my back. On a show, you called out Vin Diesel because supposedly he plays D&D, and you said to whoever the host was, Vin, I mean, he says he plays it, but I don't know anyone that ever played D&D with him. And I'm curious if that sparked him reaching out and saying, listen, asshole, I play and I'm coming over Friday.
Yeah, I was talking to Stephen Colbert when he asked me about that. And yeah, I don't know. You know, I've sent word to him that he was invited. So
it's still nothing.
Still nothing.
So probably it's all bullshit at this point. I mean, to know everyone else that's playing with you, unless he doesn't live, I don't know, you're in California, I assume, right? And maybe he doesn't live in California. I don't know. But people are flying in from Chicago to play this fucking thing. I would think at this point, maybe he's lying.
No, we're all busy people. I don't know. I can't judge
him. I mean, I don't know if you know this, Joe, but there's been a pandemic. He probably hasn't been as busy.
Good point. Yeah. Fire away.
I like a D&D, like wrestling war. Like, this is great. You should pitch this D&D, but it's a work. Like, you challenge Vin Diesel. He no-shows a couple times. Then you have a big pay-per-view battle. Yeah. Dude, this is great.
We're
filming back. Promos back and forth.
Yeah, I'll show you level 6 paladin.
In character, yes.
Yeah, a couple coffee in the big time. Yeah,
that's it.
Cream will rise to the top.
Oh, my goodness. Come on, oh, that,
by the way, I give you credit. I heard you do some of the voices. You do a lot of fucking D&D, various accents, and really get into your dungeon masterness.
It's part of my chosen profession. This is what I do for a living. I just apply those skills to whatever else is wherever else I can entertain people.
When you're preparing for a D&D night, do you think in your head, I'm going to work in a Bostonian, or I'm going to work in my Christopher Walken? Like, how do you figure out that?
Yeah, sometimes I do. Sometimes I have them planned out ahead of time. I know that, like, this character is going to speak like that, or this character is going to, you know, and I'll start working them in. Yeah. So it's part of the prep work as I start figuring out what characters I'm going to create and enter into their game, to the storyline.
Do you warm up before, like when Big Show's on his way, do you do like zip, zop, zop, zip, zap, zop, whatever that shit is? I learned it in Second City.
Nah, man, I don't do any of that while I'm getting ready. But no, I mean, you know, sometimes directors do that before theater performances. Yes.
Do you run your impressions by Sophia before you unleash it to the crowd to make sure it's up to snuff?
I mean, I'm always doing them anyway. We'll watch TV, you know, like we were watching Lost. She had never seen Lost. And, you know, I was all of a sudden I was talking like Saeed, and I just did an entire episode as Saeed for her, you know. And so I'll just start doing monologues that are like alternative dialogue that never appeared in the show, but like I'll start performing these scenes back and forth, and she'll just roll her eyes. So yeah, I'm always doing voices with her. Yeah, of course.
It does seem, and I could be wrong because I don't know either of you at all, but you have probably polar opposite interests in terms of you know, your hobbies. Is that a good way to put it?
Sure. Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, definitely. We're definitely yin and yang in many ways.
Is there some hobbies where you guys align, or they're generally like, I saw you talking about your wilderness vacations, which she probably, I could be wrong, is not something she'd want to do, nor do I see her sitting down at the D&D table. So do you have some that are hobbies that you both share?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we love movies, TV. So obviously, like, we're like all the couples in the world in that way. We're, you know, we watch movies together, TV together, have fun doing that on the couch. We love traveling. So, especially to Italy. So, any free time that we have, we like going to Italy or places where the sun shines and you can get in the water, you know, things like
that. Fair enough. So now the question I always ask, I know you're obviously, I'm guessing, if you're a D&D fan, you're probably a big comic book fan prior to even becoming part of the mythos that is Justice League and Deathstroke and playing Flash Thompson, all the stuff. Were you already a fan of that, of comic books as a kid?
I read a lot of comics when I was younger, not so much when I got older. You know, that's the thing, is like, I was a three sport athlete in high school, and right up until the end was going to go play. I was going to play basketball in college. I was pretty much set up to go do that and had offers from a couple of different places. And so, you know, once I hit that age where girls started happening, you're trying to figure out what you want to do with your life. And you start moving your eggs into that basket. You give up the games like that goes. And so, you know, I was also playing three sports and then training during the summer. And that occupied all of my time heading out of high school. And then once I got to college, like, that was it. You know, all I had time for was that. So, you know, it's one of those things where I picked it up later on. You know, I got back to D&D, but I kind of like, I don't like, I have a lot of comic books laying around that I've never read, like East West and Saga. And, you know, I have them. They're still in the shrink wrap. I've never gotten to them. So, comics kind of
went,
you know,
I'm
not up on them because I have to read so much for work, whether it's a book that I want to option or it's a script that I need to figure out if I want to produce or act in. Like, I'm constantly reading for work.
Fair enough. But D&D somehow stayed as something that you were passionate about. You may have taken a break, but
no, I took about a 30-year hiatus, so 25 years. I didn't touch it. I didn't know what went on with it. I had no idea. I just came back to it. Like I said, when I was at Warner Brothers, I wanted the rights to a series of novels that fell under the D&D umbrella. And that's what got me back into it once again, work. I wanted control of these novels. I wanted to create them. And then I needed to go about proving to the powers that be that I was the right person to take control of these novels that I had grown up with and knew more about than anybody. And so that's kind of how the D&D thing sort of came back online.
And then I read online that you also, because, you know, most people saw the first time they saw you was playing Flash in Spider-Man. But you also obviously played Deathstroke for Justice League. You're one of, I think I looked it up, like 30 or 40 people, which is larger than I thought it would be, that played both characters in both universes, DC and Marvel. I was shocked that there'd be that many, but I guess there's just an elite few people that are in phenomenal shape, good-looking actors. How many could there be?
Well, I don't know how much, you know, technically I wasn't part of the current Marvel universe. I was part of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy. So, right.
But a Marvel character, we'll say. You played a Marvel character.
I played a Marvel character, yeah, but that was prior to, you know.
Prior to Iron Man, which changed everything.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, which is fair enough. But now I'm the whole thing that started now with the Zack Snyder cut. You're in it a little bit at the end. I sat through those four. I cleared my schedule and sat down for 4 hours to sit through that thing. I'm not going to give my take on what I thought of the movie in general, but it sets up other things. There's rumors now that there's going to be a Justice League Part 2, that there's going to be a Deathstroke movie. Are all these still happening, or you can't say that?
No one's reached out to me about any of those.
Okay.
And to my understanding, I don't think anyone's reached out to anyone else about any of those. So, you know, if the fans want to see those, I urge them and recommend to them, the best thing you can do is keep watching the movie, tell your friends to watch the movie, keep pushing those numbers up to the point where they can't ignore it.
Right. That's fair enough. James, did you see Zack Snyder's cut?
I did not. I have a weird thing with live action DC. I like the animation, and I'm big on the comic books, and I almost get in fist fights over DC being better than Marvel, except for the X-Men, which I was thinking about it. Joe, in the new universe, yo, you tell me you ain't Gambit? Let's just fucking make that happen. Can we get that position?
He's too stocky for Gambit. He's too big for Gambit.
Gambit's a tall dude, bro.
No, but he's huge. He's a
Gambit wears
man.
Like 85 jackets in the fucking summer. He can wear 85 jackets. Just no like one will know.
Joe, you were going to be you auditioned to be Spider-Man. You're way too fucking big for Spider-Man.
Yeah, but that wasn't the point. They knew I wasn't. I was fresh out of drama school. So they didn't know who I was. They didn't know anything about me other than I came out of school with some heat on me, and that's what got me seen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with that said, all the guys, meaning James Franco, myself, and Toby, we all auditioned for Peter Parker and then were placed in our respective roles out of that. So they knew. I knew the casting knew. Everybody knew I wasn't right for it.
The one thing that was wild, by the way, about the Zack Snyder cut is Martian Manhunter shows up for like 30 seconds. If you don't know the mythos of who that is, you'd be like, well, what the fuck is going on right now? Look how cute that doggy is. Jesus Christ. Aw. Hilarious. She doesn't have no idea what she's doing right now. That's great.
She's trying to get out because she hears noise in the kitchen. So she thinks it's like, you know, there might be like treats involved or something.
Is she full on Chihuahua? Is that the right breed there? Is that what that is?
She's Chihuahua, mostly Chihuahua, but she has some Pomeranian and some Vizsla, which is like a Hungarian hunting dog.
I've never even heard that term. That's weird.
Yeah.
All right. So now also, I'm going to ask him about the things that may or may not be true because we're finding out things are not. Are you currently doing an animated movie with your wife called Coati?
Yes. Yeah. My wife is producing this great animated film called Coati, which is about all of the animals of the South American jungles. Mm-hmm. And I play the father of the jungle, this panther, who is like the leader and the father figure of all the animals in the jungle. And mm-hmm. my wife plays this nasty snake.
Really? Okay.
Very nasty, very mean.
Is there a release date for that or not yet? Is it still in?
I think it comes out next month.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. All right. So now a couple other quick things. You know, we don't have all the time in the world with you. Tell me a little bit about the Death Save streetwear line that you are promoting lately.
Oh, yeah. So I started a streetwear line a few years back. Heavy metal, like classic heavy metal artwork and fantasy artwork inspired. You know, all those old great album covers, whether it was Frank Frazetta or, you know, a lot of the like the real like Norwegian death metal albums and things like that. I was a big fan of all of those. And so I started licensing, like, you know, I worked out a deal with the daughter and granddaughter of Frank Frazetta and started licensing his paintings and making wearable art out of them. I did a bunch of like really cool streetwear inspired pieces for the release of The Dark Crystal for Netflix for Game of Thrones. I did like a death metal Game of Thrones shirt with HBO, and I'm getting ready to launch some other fun collaborations. I also have a capsule collection with Dungeons & Dragons where, you know, I said to the head of marketing at the time, he was in my kitchen. I just said, I'm going to make Dungeons & Dragons cool. And for the, you know, no one's ever going to get beat up for playing D&D again. I'm going to change the
did you ever get beat up for it? You were too big. Did you ever get picked on and beat up when you were playing Dungeons and Dragons as a kid? I can't imagine you would have.
No, but kids would say things and then we'd get into a fight and it would get, you know, it would get bad. I mean, I was also the captain of the football team. So, you know, what are you going to do?
When did you become 6'5"?
16.
Wow. I was much later. It didn't happen. I was like 20, but that's crazy.
I think I dunked the summer going into ninth grade or something like that.
Wow. So did you, sorry to get a little off topic, but I grew later on in life. I grew like 7 inches in a year. Right. And I grew so fast that my heart was not strong enough to keep up with my body. So I had to walk slow. If I would run, I felt like I was going to get a heart attack and die. And my doctor told me at like, I forget, I was like 18 or 19, that you need to relax because your heart is not there yet, which is pretty wild.
Yeah. Wow. No, I was always head and shoulders taller than the other kids. Like if you look at old, like the Easter egg hunts with the little kids. I'm like a full head taller than all the other kids.
Why is Uncle Joe playing Easter? What's going on here?
Yeah. No, yeah. Also. It looked like I lied about my birth certificate or something.
I'm so jealous. I've been this height since sixth grade. I was a power forward. I thought I would at worst be playing ball in Italy. And next thing you know, I'm cut because I was not a good dribbler and I was forced to play point guard. It was all over. It's done.
You know, I actually thought that I had gigantism because I continued to grow. So out of high school, I was getting taller. My feet, I'm a size 15. I don't know what size shoe you are, but my feet kept getting bigger every time. My height was bigger every time. I'm like, am I going to be Andre the Giant? Is that what's going to happen to me? No one's telling me. And then finally around 20, I stopped growing.
Oh, wow. So my brother, my kid brother is my producing partner brother. He's 6'7", and he grew into college.
Wow. Yeah, so him and I were similar because that was horrible.
Yeah, I stopped at 16. I was like same shoe size, everything, 16.
What size shoe are you?
14.
I see 14 is doable. 15 sucks. Nobody makes 15.
13 is doable.
13
I'm glad
is doable.
That, like, I can fit into the 13 dress shoe or boot or cool shoe, but a lot of those places don't, like, you know, John Varvatos doesn't make 14 boots, or at least they didn't back in the day. So there's a bit of it where it's like, you know, I kind of, it curved right at the right time.
I like that your character from the movie is your screen when your screen went out, given the metal sign right there. Pretty funny. How about you? So you said you were a metal fan the whole time. This is not, to go back to the movie for a second, you've always been a metal guy. Smiths, you also liked, you like ran the gamut of rock and roll, or did you stay pretty hardcore? I was a hair metal, heavy metal guy more than anything else.
Love Smiths, love new wave, love industrial, love like Lords of Acid. I was listening to Lords of Acid when other people were listening to Nirvana. Like, I had very eclectic, weird tastes. I love like my Life with a Thrill Kill Cult. Yeah. I like Ministry. I like the, you know, even like the early 90s DJs and, you know, drum and bass and San Francisco house DJ Dan, like, you know, even like, you know, Florida Breaks, like DJ Icy, like I was very big. And then when mashups happened, like, so I'm very much like all over the place when it comes to music. But I will say that my first concert was Pantera, Sepultura, Biohazard.
You shouldn't have said it yet. God damn it. Should have held that on for the end.
Yeah, on the Vulgar display, on the second leg of the Vulgar display of Power Tour, I saw Pantera, Sepultura, Biohazard. That was my first show.
That's cool. But one of the guys from Biohazard wanted to kick my ass one night years ago. I used to run a rock club. I can't think of his name. He was the one who had a cane. He couldn't walk right towards the end of the Biohazard stint. I can't think of his name. He wanted to get into a fight with me, and I'm tender. I don't like fighting. I'm sweet.
Joe, you're once again proving that, like, you are a five-tool player in coolness with every band that you listed right there. You're like that outfielder who can throw from the wall. You can catch over the wall. You're hitting for power. You can steal goddamn bases. You're Roberto Clemente. You're a
Pittsburgh guy. Ooh, I'll take it.
You damn
and
right,
also,
brother.
By the way, Shannon, he would also protect kids in high school from bullies.
Yes. Hero.
How nice is that? And he adopted a fucking bizarre looking cute dog. How sweet is that?
Yeah. I know.
The one I will give you a little, I never got into them. And maybe James is going to disagree with me. You were a bouncer for Goldfinger. Never really got into Goldfinger personally.
I wasn't into them either until I met and befriended the lead singer. And, you know, look, I mean, roadie or bouncer, whatever, like that's a stretch. I was like John's best friend, and John was going to go tour the world and hit a bunch of places I'd never been to. And I just spent a month on tour, touring around with the rock band and hanging with John and throwing some drunk kids off the stage, like in Australia.
Oh, fair enough. And then the last question before we wrap up with the first, I saw on one of your, well, two things on your Instagram. One, your wife dressed up as Wonder Woman. Kudos, my man. A thousand you're welcome. Thank you. Sure. And then you posted something about this thing called the Spine of Night, and you said it took 7 years to get it out. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So anyone who's a fan of like rotoscopic animation, so like we're talking like Ralph Bakshi, Lord of the Rings, or, you know, Fire and Ice, you know, old, which was also a collaboration with Frazetta, Frank Frazetta and Rock Bakshi. We're talking about like when you shoot something with actors and then painstakingly paint in the frames, kind of like if you look at like Scanner Darkly is more like a modern version of kind of that style. So yeah, so they directed a film with actors and spent 7 years painstakingly painting in the film. And then of course I got to come in and a great cast, Lucy Lawless, Richard Grant got to come in at the end and then voice these characters. And yeah, it just played South by Southwest and got picked up for worldwide distribution. And it's mind blowing. It's going to be so many people's favorite movie, and it's going to be an instant cult classic. It's going to be playing at midnight at theaters for the rest of eternity. It's amazing. I can't wait for people to see it.
Yeah. I watched the clip you put up on Instagram. Very, very cool. I enjoyed what I saw. It was only 30 seconds, whatever. And then now you had the documentary about the strip club, Le Bear. You did the one about the Pittsburgh Penguins a few years ago, right? Mm-hmm. These are all documentaries that you kind of put together on your own for the most part. I mean, or they were your conceptual things, or are they you solo, or do you work with people? And do you have another doc on deck that you want to do?
So LeBear was all my brother and I. My brother, I financed it. We produced it. Our friend from high school DP'd it, who also was the DP for Shoplifters, this guy, Andrew Wheeler, who was also in a punk band called Rambo back in Pittsburgh when I was in high school. And they were really big on the East Coast. So he's our DP. He's got a real punk sensibility. I love this guy. And so we shot Le Bear. So that was all of us. It was like a crew of four. We had a sound guy, and that was it. We drove around in a SUV around Dallas with all the equipment in the back, set it up ourselves, took it down ourselves. You know, as far as the Penguins, no, there's a guy named Leo Cafferty who put together the Penguins video or the Penguins movie, which is a comprehensive history of the Pittsburgh Penguins up to that point, which is amazing. And he put that together and then got in contact with my brother, who got in contact with me. And then I came in to narrate it. So I got to come in. I didn't have to do the heavy lifting on that one.
And do you have a doc that you're working on, like something that another subject matter, maybe a D&D doc that might be fun, or anything that you have a passion about that's another documentary that you'd like to see the light?
I do. There's something in the works that I'm not ready to talk about, because I don't like to talk about things until like the rights all get lined up and it gets put into place. So, but yes, there is something right now that I'm have been actively trying to clear the rights to for a while. And we're close, so we'll see. So hopefully maybe the next time I come on, we'll be able to talk about that.
Is it about 6'5" guys? Because I'm available if you're doing that documentary.
That'd be a great doc, I think, you know, kind of like right at that cusp of like, do you shop at the normal store or the big and tall store? Right.
What do you do?
I shop at the normal stores, but I've been very fortunate in that when it comes to suits, I get them all bespoke, custom made. So I've been lucky.
Excuse me, Mr. Maganello.
Well, but otherwise you'd have to buy a separate jacket with a separate pair of pants.
I know.
Out of both of them, and it was just a nightmare. You know.
Yeah, it is all as a fellow 6'5"er. Let me ask you this, not to dwell on height, but because we're so tall, right? And you can look around the world and notice nobody else that's over 60 is 6'5" or taller. Does it make you sad to know that tall people live far shorter lives, and you and I are going to die before James is?
Is that true? I don't know about that.
Just think about dogs, right? The smaller the dog, the longer the life expectancy. Big dogs like Great Danes live very short lives compared to small dogs, right?
So is that true that 6'5" and over has a lower life expectancy?
Lower life expectancy, 100%.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Rob, this just got sad. I got to go listen to Morrissey now to cheer myself up.
Well, but I have a lot of relatives that were 6'6" and 6'4", you know, around that height. So
To what age? Live to what age?
You're making me depressed right now. I don't know. I'm going to have to go do some.
I have a twin brother, Joe. My twin brother is 5'7", and I know he's going to live longer than me. I just know it.
Do you want to go call my wife and have this tell her I'm going to die soon? Is that really what we're doing right now? This is terrible. Why are we doing this? Like, I'm, you know, fit as a fiddle.
Well, I'm just saying it's something that freaks me out every day. That's all I'm saying, Joe. I'm sorry. I don't mean to.
How old are you? You look like a young man. Like, what's
I'm 51. I'm 51. So I've been thinking about it a lot lately.
Well, do you want to lay down on the couch now? And you want to, do you want to talk about this further? Just
well, I know
down.
That you got into meditation lately. Help me out, man.
Yeah, you need to start. Yeah, you need to start meditating. Let's talk about your diet. What's happening?
I actually, by the way, I recently found a guy at a restaurant who was my height and he looked older. He had full gray hair. Looked, I said, dude, how old are you? And he was 71. And I said, how tall are you? He said, 6'6". I'm like, you just made me so fucking happy. First time in my life I met someone that age. I felt great.
So wait, so you just go around your life in the restaurants, and if you see a tall person, you're like, excuse me, sir.
Yeah. How old are you?
You're going to die soon. Yeah. How long do you think you're going to live? I mean, like, what's happening?
That's what I do. That's how I roll. You don't do that right now?
No, don't bring that. Don't leave that flaming pile of dog shit in a bag on my front porch, pal. Get it out of here. Let's go.
Fair enough. All right, let's do this. We're going to wrap up the show with the first.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show, as you know, is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. We ask you about your first experience with all three. You kind of leaked out a little bit, the rock and roll one, but let's just reiterate it again. How old were you and what was the show?
I was probably 15 or 16, Pantera, Sepultura, Biohazard.
Right.
And were you Pittsburgh Star Lake Amphitheater?
All three bands, huge fan of.
Mm.
Yeah, so that
yeah,
was first.
Very much. Very yeah, much I so. Love Sepultura. I love Pantera. Phil Anselmo, I just saw him. He opened for Slayer at their last show ever, which I was at. And he played like all the great hits except for Walk, which really upset me.
I hosted this thing a few years ago called the Motorhead Motorboat Cruise when Lemmy was still alive. And it was a very interesting thing because Phil was on, Rex was on, and Vinny was on, all in separate bands they happened to be on. And they did do a 5-song Pantera set with various people filling in on guitar. It was amazing.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I got to meet Lemmy up at the Roxy on Sunset, which kind of like stuck in the back of my mind when it came time to decide what my character was going to look like in Shoplifters.
That is a Lemmy inspired stash for sure.
Very much.
Yeah. I got to hand him their 40th anniversary plaque on stage, which I'm fortunate to be the only person that can say that they did that, which is a great honor. All right. So now the first drug you ever did, ideally after pot, unless pot is the worst drug you ever did or not the first drug you ever did.
All right. So after pot, I did some acid at a mid-90s rave that got busted, and I thought it wasn't working. So I bought another one and did that, and then it hit me like a Mack truck in the face. So, yeah, it was two hits of acid at a mid-90s rave.
Did it hit while you got busted, or was it after you got
busted? Well, the party got busted. I was like, oh, man, what's going to happen? And then somebody had the key to a coffee shop that they worked at, and they just brought all the turntables in there, set it up, and the party went on from there. And I was like, man, this stuff isn't working. I think it was, you know, it didn't work. And then took another one and then it worked.
And did you enjoy it, or that was your one time because it was a shitty experience?
It was like an 8-hour boxing match against my shadow in which I won by like non-unanimous decision.
That's great.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And now the first time you had sex?
I was 15.
15. That's young. So same year as the concert, 15.
Oh, what a good year.
That's a good year for you, Joe.
Yeah. Lot happened that year.
All right. So let's wrap by saying the new movie is out now, Shoplifters. And is there anything else that we didn't, the Shoplifters of the World, anything else we didn't plug before we wrap this up?
No, I think that's it. Shoplifters, go run those numbers up on Justice League and on Zach's Justice League. And we get some fun stuff. So stay tuned. If you got kids, I play a character on the Disney animated series, Big City Greens. I play a character named Viper Fang who fights against Danny Trejo's. I'm the nemesis of Danny Trejo's, Tiger Fang. So if you get kids, go watch that. It's fun. And yeah, then Spine and Idol come out at some point later on this year, as will Zack Snyder's 3D animated Army of the Dead prequel that I star in. That's really fun. That'll come out later on in the year, and some other surprises too.
Wow, that's a pretty active year. I will go around quickly. James, your plugs?
Okay, follow me on Instagrams, TheJamesMadden. Also, the Commissioner Comedy Podcast. We're blowing up, baby. The numbers are jumping around. It's the greatest podcast about comedy. You will run through a wall. You will get fired up. It's the shit. April 2nd, I had a single drop with a band backing me. It's New York Comedy Club Sessions with two other dope comics. My peanut allergy joke with a fucking band. That's right, dog. It's wild. And my new album is coming out by May, I believe, now. It's called The Check Spot. It's me doing a Q&A while people are paying their goddamn bills pre-COVID in a packed comedy club. The worst spot to do in comedy, The Check Spot. It's coming out, dog. Boom! I'm out. And then I'm still going to get you the Gambit audition. I'm going to, you have a manager, but you should be
Gambit. Wrap it up quickly. Shannon, your plugs?
Oh, I wanted to give you guys a quick facts about your height really quickly. I have good news and bad news.
Okay.
The bad news is, according to a 1992 study of nearly 1,700 dead guys, found that on average, men shorter than 5'9 hung around till the age of 71, while taller men, 6'4 and over, checked out around the age of 64. However, it is also true that unhealthy short people die younger than unhealthy tall people.
Oh, that's a weird fact. Wow.
Because short
those are great facts, Shannon. Thank you.
But I was still right. It's a 7-year difference. That's a big difference.
Yeah.
But that's wild.
Yeah. So if you stay healthier, you're all right.
Good. So Joe's fine and I'm out. I'm going to be boxing out next week. Thanks for that, Shannon. And Shannon, you're fine.
Follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
Joe, you believe in ghosts? Yes or no?
I think there's something unexplainable to all of that. Yes, I think there's something that exists. I don't know what it is, but there's something going
That's
on.
That's the right answer. I think it's weird to have a definitive yes or a definitive no. The I don't know is the right answer, but something's out there. Ani, your plugs, and we'll let this man go.
Before Ani goes, can I just be a fangirl for 1 second and just say that huge True Blood fan. I've watched the series straight through at least 6 times. And Alcide Herbeau is got to be the best character of the entire series. So
that's my Wolf Thunder. I had
also, Joe, you should know we had a list of
that's great.
That's awesome. Thank you.
All the people involved with the show put a list together of their favorite people they wish to get on the show, and Shannon had you on the list. So very happy that you did.
Thank you.
Ani.
Yes, you guys can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Ani_Moosh and check out my website at AniMooshMedia.com. And I was just on The Thing Is. So just check that out at episode 2.
Great. Thank you so much. And my health and wellness podcast with the founder of Good Sugar is with the founder of Juice Press, rather, is called The Good Sugar Podcast. My book, which I show up, hit the top 100 in health and wellness. And I thank you all for being a part of it. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. Joe, thank you for being so cool. And I'm sorry I was so disappointing in my life expectancy with you.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Shannon just straightened us out. It's not true. So hopefully this will change your attitude towards tall waiters in the future.
All right. But honestly, Joe, it was a real pleasure to have you on, man. Thank you so much.
Nah, thanks for having me. This was a blast. Thank you.
And tell Bubbles goodbye.
She's right here.
Bye, Bubbles.
Hey, bye-bye, Bubbles. Bye-bye.
Listening to the SDR Show.